Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Lori Conrad. Conrad is a classical pianist and composer. She studied piano and composition at Ithaca College with pianist George King Driscoll and composer Karel Husa. Her compositions have been performed at Lincoln Center, as well as in Warsaw, Poland, Sweden, Germany, and in the Netherlands. Her music has aired on radio stations all over the world, including WQXR in New York. We'll be playing excerpts from her latest work, Unsung Songs, based on the haiku poetry of William Hurley. And welcome to the show.
Hi, Tish. Thank you for asking me.
Now, I wanted to know if you come from a musical family. Where did you start, you know, wanting to become a musician and so on?
No one in my family was a musician, but my best friend, Ellen Dubin, was studying piano at the age of five. I think we were five. And I heard her practicing for a concert, her first concert. It was Night Train. And I was standing there watching her, and she was telling me how she was going to get to wear a new white dress. And I said to myself, this is the life for me.
Really?
And that's when I decided I was going to become a pianist.
Wow. And so your family was encouraging, obviously, or you wouldn't have become such an accomplished pianist and musician, would you?
I guess so, but mainly it was me, and I think that's in a way better. You know, it all came from me. I just announced I wanted a piano and so forth, and I never wavered, really.
Yeah. God, that's amazing when you have a vision like that so young. Mm-hmm. Now, you studied piano and composition at Ithaca College, and you said it was your composition teacher who said you were a composer and you should write, and you hadn't thought of it before then. Talk to us about that.
No, I hadn't at all. I wanted to be a pianist, and then I was actually a professional clarinet player in high school. So I went to college as a clarinet player, and then I switched to piano when I heard George King Driscoll play a beautiful recital. I decided to become a pianist, but I'd been a protege even when I was little, mm-hmm. wunderkind. So changed to piano, but then I smashed my hand in a car door.
Oh, my.
So I kind of wrecked my career at an early age, although I still play as I am on this recording that you're going to play today. But in college, I had to take composition. It was a requirement. So I took it year after year, and then as a grad student, I took it year after year. But I didn't really want to be a composer. I wanted to be a pianist.
Huh.
But Karel kept saying what a wonderful composer I was and that I should write, and finally I started writing.
So he knew you were a good composer, so therefore you had been trying to compose before that.
Well, I had to. I wanted to get, through college. But all of a sudden it took on a whole new meaning for me, and I don't know when or how that happened. But suddenly it's a very rarefied air that you're living in to be a composer. It's something you can't really get any other way. It's very mental, but at the same time, you're surrounded by all this inner and outer music. And somehow it's an expression of the soul that I couldn't really capture any other way. And so now I actually crave it. Uh-huh. And I don't know when that suddenly switched, but I still also give piano concerts, too.
That's amazing to me. So, mm-hmm. so you felt like you were actually exercising the soul's music in some ways.
Oh, yes.
Instead of having to do it like in school when you were forced to compose.
Yeah, suddenly, and I don't know how that happened.
Wow. Can you explain to us what that feels like for you? Do you go on to a different mental journey?
Well, it is. And often the pieces that I'm going to write, for instance, one day I was walking into town just to go to Hal's Deli for a sandwich, and suddenly this piece just appeared, the score in my mind. I'm clairvoyant. And the whole score just appeared in my mind, so I ran home and I wrote it down, basically.
And it was complete, just
pretty much. I mean, I couldn't see all the notes, but I could see enough. So as soon as I went to the piano and I just sat down and just wrote and wrote and wrote. Sometimes it'll come in a dream, and the entire dream will be the music. I remember I had one dream with my singer, my beautiful singer, Louise McConnell. And in the dream, we were in this beautiful realm, it was gorgeous with trees and water. And everything in that dream was my music, and it was all around us.
Wow.
Yeah. So it can happen that way, too. This piece that we're playing today, the Unsung Songs, nothing. I had nothing, nothing, nothing until I sat down at the piano, and then suddenly it was just a torrent. So it's always different.
I want you to talk a little bit more about that. The unsung songs is what you're referring to. We're going to play some excerpts from that. How did you end up collaborating with the poet?
With William?
Yeah.
He actually sent me his poems. He sent them out to a lot of people. And I read them, and they're poems. There were 27 poems about autumn in the Ithaca area. He even mentions the gorges in one of the poems. And they were very beautiful. So I wrote him back. I emailed him back and said, Bill, how would you like me to set them to music? And he said, oh, that's always been my dream.
So he was actually sending them out, trying to get musicians to...
No, he was just sending them out, I think, to friends, you know, sharing this beautiful poetry that he'd written. But some of them were so musically oriented anyway, you know. So I chose, out of the 27, I chose 15.
Yeah, they're beautiful. Yeah. And I want to play the first excerpt. It's called Sense of Summer. To tell us a little bit about it before we play this.
Sense of Summer, in the cycle, as I say, it's 15 pieces, but I wanted it to be also that you could play one movement at a time, or to play the whole cycle. I wanted it to be one thought, let's say, one entity of all 15. So in doing that, I wanted to vary the dynamics of the pieces, the lengths of the pieces, the instrumentation. Some don't have piano, some don't have flute, and so on. But I thought, well, haiku poems are like a glance, really, at the world. I mean, this world is so vast and infinite, and all these manifestations everywhere just changing and appearing and disappearing. But haiku, well, all poetry, of course, distills, but especially, let's say, the haiku. So I started out thinking I have these long pieces, you know, regular length pieces, but then at a certain point I saw clairvoyantly the musicians playing these smaller pieces, more like the two-line songs I used to write when I was younger, 12-tone. They're just two-line songs, short, very short. And I thought, well, those are more like the haiku poems. They're simple, they're short, they're uncomplicated. And I kept seeing the musicians playing them, so I thought, I think I'll write some of them in this more haiku style, this simple, short style. So the ones that you actually chose to play today are all in that haiku style.
Wow. Let's let the audience have a sample of this.
Okay.
Sense of Summer. You know what I noticed when I was first listening to this? I noticed that it went from light to almost alarming. You know, I mean, the feeling for me, it was like it suddenly became really intense.
Oh, you mean the whole cycle?
No, this song particularly. I felt it seemed light at first, and then there was an intensity in some of it. I don't know. I couldn't tell where you were trying to lead us.
Oh, well, you have to realize, too, that when you're dealing with poems and images throughout musical history, composers love to try to portray the images you know, whether they've chosen them or someone else has written a poem. So, yes, I am trying to portray these fragrances, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
But, no, I wouldn't say there's anything alarming. I hadn't thought of it being alarming.
Maybe it was an urgency that I felt. Like, the coming of summer seems intense to me.
Oh, well, that's true. Yeah.
So that maybe that's what I was reacting to. But anyway, it's a beautiful piece.
Yeah, I think I was feeling more the fullness of mm-hmm. the end of summer and those fragrances, but also starting with the lightness. So it was kind of a combination of both. And the first one, the sense of summer, and the last one are kind of like bookends. They both have triplet figures in the piano, and they're very different than the rest of the cycle in many ways. They kind of float away from the rest of the cycle.
Mm,
so it's interesting that you chose the first one.
Yeah. Oh, I loved it. I loved all of them. It's a beautiful work, a complete work. Now, you keep a composer's journal, what you call a composer's journal, and you talk a lot about gardening. Tell us about your passion for gardening. It must inform a lot of your music.
Yes. Oh, I'm out in the gardens. I would be out there all the time. I can't do it anymore the way I used to. But that kind of happened after my car accident, where I couldn't do anything else. I couldn't play piano for about 7 years.
Wow.
I couldn't even cross the street, really. I had terrible injuries. In that time, I couldn't be giving concerts. So instead, I created all these gardens. And if you've been near my house, it's blocks of gardens. And I used to have them across the street as well. And it was my way of giving beauty to the world. My music, it became painting, really, and then I started actually painting.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about that, too. So gardening took the place of the music
of
that
music,
you could not play at that point.
And to watch people walking through those gardens and the fragrances, and some people would bring cameras, and the children would thank me. Probably 1,000 people have thanked me for those gardens.
I've seen photos. You've posted a lot of photos on Facebook.
So it's my way also of keeping contact with my fellow human beings and giving something to them.
Did you continue composing during this time when you were recovering from this car accident?
A bit. It's easier physically, obviously, to compose than to play piano. I started at a certain point, but for years I couldn't really do anything but the gardens. And there is nothing like being out in the garden at night and just, they're really my friends.
Uh-huh. I had this vision as I was reading your composer's journal when you talk so much about this. You'd be outside digging and then you'd go running into the house to get on the piano because you'd been inspired by maybe a little worm that had come up or something.
Just the beauty of it. And the sounds, too, all the bugs.
Well, you know, I mean, traditionally artists of all types have gotten so much inspiration from nature, and this proves it in your case as well. Now, I want to play another excerpt from Unsung Songs. This one's called Morning Tea. To tell us a little bit about this one.
This I wrote for the flute player. And interestingly enough, at first, the beautiful flute player, Laura Campbell, she's played on all the CDs pretty much that I've done, and she was leaving town. So at first I wrote the flute part for a flutist I didn't even know who they would be. But when I found out she was going to be in town and could play the concert and the recording, I changed the score for her. And that's how important it can be to know the musician you're writing for.
Mm.
I actually could hear her playing it as I wrote it. And the idea behind Morning Tea, the strings are the grasses of the poem, and the flute would be just the joy of sitting down on a beautiful morning and having tea, or it could be a bird.
Let's listen to this excerpt.
Thank you.
I just find this whole series just really gorgeous. But you know what? Morning tea, I almost felt like you were out there by yourself drinking tea.
Exactly.
Is that what it was, too?
It is, yeah. And that's why I kept it very simple, again, in this haiku style. And the flute, yes, is that person or just the joy or the bird, and you're alone just in that lovely solitude and the beauty of the day.
If you're just joining us, my guest is composer and pianist Lori Conrad. And we're talking about her CD, Unsung Songs, based on haiku poetry by William Hurley. You mentioned this just briefly. I want to talk to you about the fact that you are also a painter. Do you feel like music and painting are in some ways the same language?
It's all the same language, I think. It's all coming from the same place. I also write some poetry, and often I use it in my music. It's all really the same, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you go into different modes of thinking when you're painting rather than when you're trying to write music?
It's funny that you say that. It all comes ultimately from the same place inside, but it does express itself differently and comes through you differently.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say that the music is the only form that really fills me completely.
Oh, really?
It's just the way I am.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I think artists are all drawn to the instrument or the words, whatever it is that really reveals us to ourselves.
Yeah. You know? Well, I think music takes you on a ride, and painting sort of takes you to a place. You know, I feel like I can fly more when I'm listening to music. When I'm looking at painting, it's more stasis to me, even if it evokes emotion.
And yet it's so beautiful, and then you have it on the wall. The thing about music is that it's so intangible. As soon as it stops playing, it disappears. But when you paint, you're giving someone something that's on their wall. They can look at it any time they want. It's just there. So it's a different thing.
You know, your painting looks like it's influenced by Monet or the Impressionists. It's really beautiful stuff. I was really impressed.
Thank you.
I'm jealous that somebody could be so talented in so many different realms.
Entirely self-taught. That's because I couldn't go out in the gardens anymore, so I started painting.
Uh-huh. And do you paint from memory or photographs, or do you sit in the yard and paint some of these scenes?
I can't be outside. That's why I'm painting. So I end up in the hospital in heat now since the anaphylactic shock. That's another thing. But it's a replacement for being out in nature. So I'm actually painting where I'd like to be. And I think that's one reason people like the paintings, because you can actually almost walk into them.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what I do. I put them up around my house, and then I feel like I'm outside.
Uh-huh. So, but you are painting them from memory, since you can't be out, huh?
Some of them. And then some of them I do go out, take photographs from the car, and then I come back, print them up, and I'll paint from them. But I'll start with them. Generally, I'll then take off from there. But sometimes I'll do it very accurately just for fun, so that I can also know that I, you know, it's kind of honing my skills, let's say.
Uh-huh.
But I like the ones where it's just an impression, you know.
Yeah, it does look like impressionist stuff. Really, there's a few that really reminded me of Monet. Really beautiful stuff.
Well, thank you.
I want to play another excerpt from Unsung Songs. This one's called The Bear.
Well, it's actually called, I think, Whispers on the Wind. But originally it was The Bear, but then The Bear isn't very poetic.
So you changed the title?
Changed it. Uh-huh. But it's the wind. The bear is getting, he's listening to the wind and getting, let's say, ideas from the wind or thoughts from the wind and messages from the wind. So the piano and the flute represent the wind. And when the cello eventually comes in, then that's the bear. I wanted to give the cellist something, a little solo there, too.
Did you come up with getting inside the bear's head for this piece like you have in other occasions?
No, I just wanted the magic of the wind and the message there. And for this one, I used the whole tone scale. It's not really 12-tone.
Let's listen to it.
Okay. Thank you.
you know what that felt like to me when I first listened to it? Was it felt like the flute and the piano were talking to each other. Is it supposed to sound like that?
It is, and that all music is that. It's just it's like this dialogue that's going, being passed around. It's so beautiful. I think that's one reason musicians have a hard time in life, because in the music, it's all scripted in the conversations, and everyone listens to everyone. And then you have these beautiful choirs of people sympathizing or empathizing. And in life, it's just not like that. It's not scripted, and I think we get confused, we musicians. We think it's going to be that kind of an ordered, respectful, beautiful world.
Are you always hearing music?
Yes.
I mean, do you hear music no matter what you're doing?
Yes. It's almost constant.
So is it hard for you to be around people?
No, they become a part of it.
Really?
Yeah, eventually it all starts becoming music.
Uh-huh. So it's not an intrusion.
Yeah, so it's not even off in pitches, but I know the music's there. It's everywhere.
So you don't have to wake up from dreams to come up with a whole score. You hear it in everyday life all the time.
Right.
You talk about the beauty that you hear and the beauty that you're trying to convey. Do you ever hear things that aren't beautiful and want to portray? I mean, real life isn't just beautiful, of course. Do you ever want to portray that?
When I was younger, definitely. And I actually wrote one thing for two pianos about the horrible things in World War II. The Holocaust, and that gets pretty intense.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm getting older, you know.
And so you want to try to stick with the beauty in the world instead of the horror.
That is true.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Do you play all the instruments that you write for? I would think that one would need to know the basics at least, but do you play all these instruments? You write for all these different things like flute and, you know, cello and...
No, I don't play them all. I don't think the composers do. Most composers throughout history have been keyboard players, pianists, sometimes string players. But yes, you have to have a working knowledge. And I played in the orchestra, as I said, you know, when I was younger. So I know what, you get to know what they're capable of, what their registers sound like and all that, because you have to be able to hear it in your head, but you also don't want to torture the poor players. You know, you want to give them something that will sound beautiful and be fun to play.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of difficulty, you want to expand the technique a little bit, give them a challenge, but you don't want them just to go home and tear their hair out. You know, I have a passing acquaintance with many instruments, but no, I can't play them all.
You have told me that your music has been played all over the world in different cities and different, you know, places where there are different languages. Do you ever hear your music being portrayed incorrectly in regard to how you imagined it?
Oh, that happens all the time, I'm afraid.
Does it really?
And my teacher, Karel Husa, once said, he was some big orchestra, I think, and he said, oh, they just wrecked my piece. He said, you know, it happens, but it's okay. At least the music's being played, and someone else then will hear it, maybe like it, and then perform it. Yeah, it does happen, I'm afraid.
Yeah, and there's nothing you can do about it, right?
No.
There's absolutely except for to say you're not allowed to play that again.
Or please don't play that again.
Well, what do you think goes wrong, though? Is it because they haven't heard your vision, or they don't have musicians who are skilled enough? How does it go wrong?
Oh, music is so intangible. What makes a fine musician? Oh, I don't know if we can even put words to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so instinctive, really.
Yeah. How much influence does the conductor have in regard to interpreting, especially your music?
Tremendous.
Yeah.
Conductors, their vision really does prevail if they have good musicians.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you have fine musicians, the conductor can evoke almost anything he wants from them.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lovely thing.
Yeah.
It's almost like they become his aura or his own soul out there. Oh. But then you need fine musicians.
Yeah. So when you're producing these pieces like the pieces we've been playing today, are you also working as a conductor and is stopping people and going, no, that's not what I meant, you know, and your arms are moving and are you controlling?
Yes. Well, you give, certainly, yes. You try to give suggestions. That's one reason I record is it's for all the musicians, hopefully in the future, that will want to play my pieces. So it's to give them an idea of what I would like. You know, I'm sure they'll improve upon it and make changes, but it's just a basic idea. Otherwise, you know, it's so hard in a musical score to really portray what you mean, even if you put words in the score, because it is so fleeting and intangible and It's not words, music.
Yeah. And then music is its own voice. When you're writing words, you're speaking with a different voice. Yeah.
Yeah, it's our first language for the musician. Music is our language.
Yeah. Well, I want to play one more excerpt from Unsung Songs. This one's called Dreams. To tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, the poem is about the trees getting ready for winter and retreating, and it's such a lovely image of them having dreams. So I made this one a little more deep, let's say, or, well, you'll hear.
Okay, let's listen. It's beautiful. You know, I feel like it's both mournful and then there's a hint of light coming to us, you know? It's beautiful. Yeah. Well, Laurie, we're almost out of time. Can you talk to us a tiny little bit about maybe some new work you might be working on that we can expect?
Well, I decided after working with Laura Campbell, the flutist again, that I think I'd like to write a piano flute piece. Just for the two of us, and I haven't written much for piano because the literature is so vast for piano, and we don't really need new pieces, so I always try to write for other instruments that maybe could use more literature. But in this case, I just had such a wonderful time playing with her.
Great.
So that's my new project.
That's great. How about giving our listeners your website?
Uh-huh. It's www.figaro, F-I-G-A-R-O, books. .com, and if you go to community, under community, there's a composer's journal.
That's great. Well, Laurie Conrad, thank you so much for joining us. Again, my guest has been Laurie Conrad. She's a composer and pianist. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tish.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.